podcasting brought to you by New Constructs, an independent investment research firm committed to helping our clients invest wisely and confidently. Visit newconstructs.com or tweet us at New Constructs. Here's your host, investor and market veteran, David Trainer.
Hi, this is David Trainer, and today I'm going to tell you about what President Obama's increased regulatory scrutiny on the advisory business, what that means for you. First, I want to remind you of all the great free research, tutorials, podcasts that are available at newconstructs.com. We make it easy for you to understand how our research works because we want you to have as transparent a view as possible of all the work we do. This week, I was meeting with institutional clients all across one of the biggest cities in the country, and the transparency of our work is unparalleled. Nobody does more work than we do, and nobody does a better job of showing you how much work they do than we do, mainly because we do so much. Other people just don't have that much to show, and we want to make that clear. So, Mr. Obama made a speech yesterday talking about how there's going to be increased oversight on advisors, making sure that there's more transparency about what they're charging their clients and what kind of risk they're putting their clients in. And what that means for you, advisor, is that you're going to be able to make, you're going to need to be sure, and a lot of it, especially on the independent side, and a lot of the wirehouse firms, especially certain ones, are ahead of this game. They can push a button and explain to their clients exactly how much they're charging them. That's key. Interestingly, if you didn't know this, it wasn't that way many, many years ago. One of my good friends and founder of a firm, great firm, another financial technology firm in Nashville, Wealth Access, David Benskin, told me the reason he started his company is because when he was an advisor with a major wirehouse firm, Bulge Bracket wirehouse firm, he couldn't even figure out what he charged his clients. He said he spent hours, days trying to figure it out. He couldn't figure out what he charged his own clients. And that was on purpose. They didn't want you to be able to figure it out because they didn't want to have the clients know, because they wanted to be able to charge them more than they probably should. So that's a big part of the transparency. The other part, and that one's obvious. The other part that's not so obvious is risk. The risk of the strategies that you're putting your clients in. And one of the biggest myths, and you've heard me talk about this before, and about the research business and risk assessment business. One of the biggest risks there, one of the biggest myths there is that all the research is actually done with real due diligence. I've explained to you before how Wall Street analysts are not reading annual reports. Any person who's seen my slide deck and my presentation, I talk about how annual reports are longer than the average novel, more pages than the average novel, and they're bigger pages, and the material is infinitely more complex. It takes many, many hours, days to read a single annual report. And in order to do your diligence on any holding in your portfolio, you need to have read at least 10 of those. So that means that if you're going to have 20 companies in your portfolio, you're spending the better part of a month, straight month. If that's all you did, 40 hours a week, it would take you months to read all the annual reports. And that's not counting building the models and managing the models and updating the models. It's become an impossible task, and nobody knows this better than we do. That's why we've created technology that we have. That's why the TEP regulators, securities regulators in the world, are tapping into our systems, as are the top accounting rule setters in the world. They need this now. There's no way to keep up with this kind of work manually. You need to do it electronically. And we are on the cutting edge of that. No one does it better than we do. Nobody has better data than us. Nobody has the technology to go through filings that we've created. It's truly amazing. And it's amazing in that it allows our clients to fulfill fiduciary responsibilities more effectively. In fact, they're not truly fully fulfilling fiduciary responsibilities. There's a risk that they are not truly fulfilling fiduciary responsibilities if they don't have our tool, because there's no way that they can know that they have covered all of the devils in the details in the footnotes and in the fine print of these filings if they haven't used New Constructs. And the dirty little secret of research is that nobody's been really been doing that. So if nobody's doing that, you know, regulators can't basically go in and put everyone in jail. But as more and more clients are using new constructs to do the appropriate amount of diligence so that they can give their clients a true assessment, not just a true assessment of underlying cash flows and earnings, but something that's truly independent. New Constructs is a fully independent firm. No Wall Street ties, no corporate banking ties, no ties with companies whatsoever. The only calls we do with management is when they call us to get angry at us about our analysis of their company. And you know how those conversations go? They say, your number about this or that is wrong. It's not right. I say, oh, really? Why don't you check page 573 of your 10K? And the conversation ends right there. I don't hear from them again. This has happened with some of the largest companies in America. I've gotten calls from their general counsel threatening to sue us. We did a big story on this with Forbes once. Forbes chickened out of the story because one of the biggest automobile manufacturers in the country, I won't name the name, intimidated Forbes out of doing it. They called me, tried to intimidate me, and I said, what do you want me to do? I'm just reading this off of page 344 of the 10K. I don't remember the exact page. And they said, well, you're really sure about that? I said, yeah, I'm sure about it. Are you not sure about what you published? Conversation ended. I've told Forbes that we had perfect data. There was no problem with it. Forbes didn't run the story. You can do, you can read between the lines there. Probably had something to do with advertising revenue. So, point is, as our system becomes more prevalent, it becomes not just a competitive advantage to the clients who have it today, it becomes a regulatory requirement. It becomes required to fulfill fiduciary responsibilities because you're not going to get the same kind of earnings quality and due diligence that we do. And it's not just on the individual companies where this matters. Take, for example, my report on Eastman Kodak back in early 2011, a perfect example of how due diligence is important, not just on individual companies, but across all companies, because you don't know what an abnormal reporting number is. You don't know what abnormal data is in a 10K necessarily. You don't know what that is if you haven't looked at all companies. That's part of how we were able to identify Eastman Kodak as a big bankruptcy risk 9 months before they went bankrupt. What they did was they found a way to make money, well, not make really make money, but to falsely make money or boost their accounting income by accruing over 2% of their revenues and much larger percent of their earnings from a pension plan that was underfunded by $2.6 billion or three times their market cap at the time. Was at the end of 2010. Making money from a pension plan that's underfunded by $2.6 billion, which is three times their market cap at the time. How do they do that? By using a return on plan assets assumption or forecast for their pension plan that was the highest of all companies, all major publicly traded companies that we covered in 2010. So not only do we say, oh, that's an awfully high number, 8.7% for a pension fund that had a very significant amount of its assets in fixed income, which even back in 2010 was not yielding rates anywhere close to 8.7%. So even if it were all in equities, that's a pretty high number to assume. But knowing that it was the highest number of all publicly traded companies that we covered, and we cover 3,000, and typically we cover pretty much all major pension plans. The small companies we don't cover tend not to have pension plans, so we pretty much cover them all usually. Anyway, that's added insight. That's an abnormal number. That's the kind of numbers that regulators need. That's the kind of numbers that investors need to know to really fully understand their risks and properly perform or fulfill fiduciary responsibilities. You need to know these things in order to make a fully informed decision. That's the kind of work we do on all over 3,000 companies we cover every day, every minute. That's what we specialize in. That's what we live for. That's why we have the most transparent models in the business. We want you to see this kind of data. We want you to see this kind of work that we do. We do more work on the balance sheet and write-downs. We've seen nearly 26,000 write-downs in the last 5 years we collect. And we don't have a materiality threshold. We collect them all. Because what happens is companies lots of times break up the write-downs into little bits and pieces so that it's not material on an individual basis, but when you add them all up, it is material. And if you don't have a machine to go around and collect all these things, you're in trouble because it takes too long to do it manually. Ask anyone who's ever read an annual report. And if you, a listener here today, right now, if you've read an annual report yourself, you know what I'm talking about. I met with many of the top investors in the world this week. And down to a single person, not one of them said they had the time, energy, or even interest in reading more than maybe one or two annual reports a year. And if they had all the time in the world, energy, and resources, oh yeah, they do it, absolutely. They can't. They need technology. They need what we have. Everyone needs what they have if they care about fundamentals. And if they care about fulfilling fiduciary responsibilities. And I don't blame you if it's not something you've done before, because it's not really been something that has been really overtly known to be done. Too many people have assumed that this was part of the natural research process when it is not. I can categorically tell you that there are very, very few Wall Street analysts that have time and actually even care to read annual reports. They don't get paid for that. They don't make money giving good advice. Very few research analysts make money giving good advice. They make money helping the bank make money in the ways the banks make money. They do not make money selling research. They do not make money in their research practices. They make money in their investment banking and trading. So the masters of the research universe are your investment bankers and your traders. If the research guys aren't helping those guys make money, they don't keep them around. I experienced this firsthand. When I was working with Mike Mayo, Credit Suisse, he was the top-ranked bank analyst in the country, in the world, did great, high-integrity, highly ethical work, wasn't afraid to be negative on banks. Guess what? He got the boot. Fortune did a big story on it. He got the boot because he wasn't friendly with the bankers. Documented. Look it up. Mike Mayo. This is around 2001, Mike Mayo, Fortune magazine, Al Jackson's also quoted. He was a global head of research, also quoted in the story. Anyway, you get the idea. I'm not making this up. Research analysts are really not in the business of reading annual reports. Don't get me wrong, there are some that do it, just not many. And it's not research that's going to be made available to the public. I guarantee you the people we're seeing on CNBC and any of the other lesser research providers, the big mass providers, the S&Ps, the Morningstars, I guarantee you those folks aren't doing it. They cover too many companies. It's impossible. I know because I did, when I was on Wall Street, I was covering a handful of companies myself. And when I say handful, it was five or less. And it was pretty much, and I was one of the fastest people in the business that did it. I had templates in place because that's what I did before I was a sell-side research analyst. I specialized in doing nothing but building these models and reading annual reports. I was super fast. I'm the guy who knew how to figure out how to build the technology to make it faster. And the most companies I could cover with integrity was five. And that's what I grew up in the business doing. And I would say, hand on heart, I doubt there are very few people in the world outside of Warren Buffett who've read more annual reports than I have, who know more about where the bodies are buried, who know how to go through them faster, how to build models to use the data faster than what I do. And that's how long it takes me, and that's the number of companies I can cover. So, long story short, it's part of your fiduciary responsibilities to use a firm like New Constructs. I'm not saying I'm the only one in the world that does this work. So, New Constructs or anyone else that goes to do the diligence that we do, you need to do that to fulfill fiduciary responsibilities to your clients. Otherwise, how do you know for sure that you're fully advising them of the risks that they are taking on by holding certain stocks? If you've not gone through and checked the fine print yourself, you need to find someone who has, who can sign off on what the risks are in the earnings quality and in the valuation.